This is take two of Molly and Bob talking history. The 24th of June, 1990.
Right. We had left off. I was just moving up towards Ortona, the fighting around Ortona. And before that, the place where we had been quartered, just before we were suddenly told that we had to move up, they moved us into this little Italian town where the streets were almost vertical. And
were you going in the tank?
Well, the tanks were harbored somewhere in the town, and then we would have to walk up to these rooms, and we were told we had to go in and find rooms for the men, and we'd go in and we'd always look for a woman to do business with rather than a man, because we found the women were much more efficient than everything. And I remember still the questions we'd have to ask, like, noi uomini abbiamo bisogno di una camera, or due camera, or tre camera, one room, two rooms, or three rooms. My men need this many rooms. And we'd ask these women, and they would sort of nod, and then they'd go in and they'd move everybody out of the room, and we would take over this room. And we got all the troops all quartered in these rooms, and we were there for, I forget, a couple of weeks or something, in this pouring, teeming rain. It was raining all the time.
And did they stay the tent? That was part of having the room?
They didn't, but I remember one woman, an Italian woman, she told me to come in, and she gave me, I didn't know what it was, and she'd given me this thing to eat. It was a delicacy of theirs, and it was pork, sort of pork fat. It was all sort of, it was quite tasty if you like fat, but it was, it was well cooked, you know, it was sort of
grittle,
crisp, sort of like in,
like you have crackling.
A crackling, yeah, that kind of thing. So, so they weren't unfriendly at all. Mm. And anyway, we were there for a couple of weeks. But then when we moved up, one night, I remember then we moved from this place where we were in the houses, and we had out on the countryside, and we had a huge tent that we had picked up somewhere, great big, almost like a circus tent, and all the officers, we were all sleeping in this tent. And I remember having gotten so beautifully asleep in my little sleeping bag and everything, and the rain was pouring down the outside, and I felt warm and dry and everything, and I remember this fellow pushing my shoulder and saying, "Wake up, wake up, we're moving." And I looked up at this fellow telling me that with a little smile on his face. And we had to get up and go out in this pouring rain and wake the men up in these miserable little pup tents that they were sleeping in and drag them out and get in absolutely soaking wet before we even got into the bloody tanks. And then get into the tanks and, you know, put everything on the back of the tank and drive off in this rain. Moving up towards the place where actually they loaded us all on these LST landing ship tanks. The U.S. Navy took us around Italy to land us where we went after that time. But that was a miserable trip. We were soaking wet and everything. But then we got up to this place where they had run into the Germans, and there were knocked out tanks around and everywhere. It was a shambles up there in a way, but as any battlefield is. One of the things that happened with us is when we got all lined up finally to go in, and we went by this bridge that I told you about before, where the engineers had built, you see, they'd been held up because they couldn't get the tanks across this little river, a little stream, because everything was so wet from the rain, and they had to build this, I think they called it a Bailey Bridge or something. It was a bridge that the equipment was carried by the army, but they had to erect it, kind of like in a big erector set. And these guys that had to do this under shell fire all the night before, and they had built it. And as we went over the bridge, as I told you, there were these dead engineers, but there were also some dead Germans lying all around this bridge, because the infantry had been up there trying to hold the Germans off.
Right.
So they could build it, and the Germans were attacking the infantry to try and prevent the bridge being built and all that. But we hadn't got into all that. But when we went across, we saw the shambles that they had gone through in order to make it possible for us to get across. So we felt that we ought to justify that somehow. I don't know. Anyway, we had a plan. The plan of moving, we had this Tommy Melvin, who was a good friend of mine, was in his tank and his other tanks that were with him, just ahead of me, and I was just behind him. We were up in sort of like a domino, you know, or like a figure five, with the dots. Each of the dots is a troop of three tanks, and in the middle, the headquarters troop. And we were going through this olive orchard. And in this olive orchard, it was on a little bit higher ground, and you could get off the road, and we were off the road. But then it came down into a little gully just up ahead, and again, it got in, you couldn't get through that gully because it was wet, and you had to get up onto the road, and there was a little bridge going across this stream in the gully. And Tommy, and he went, it was first, his tank went up to get across that stuff. I couldn't see his tank at this time. Where he was down in the gully ahead of me. And then I suddenly felt this whoop, even in a tank you could feel it, a hell of a whoop of a tank. And then a big black cloud rose up above these trees, and I didn't know what the hell had happened, but what had happened was the Germans had put a big 500-pound bomb or something under this bridge, and when Tommy's tank got over top of it, they pushed a lever and they blew the tank up. It blew the turret right off of the tank. The turret went up, I don't know how far, 100 or 2 feet, and then down, and the tank was upside down. The bottom of it were these big, long, jagged steel fingers that where the steel had just been blown in from this thing. So they were all, I got up, and oh, I didn't know what had happened, except as I came by, they told me over the air that you have to go through that crater that had been made, because it was the only way you could get up. So we did, we went down into the city, and I just remember seeing Tommy's turret upside down, lying on the ground there, and the tank over here upside down. It was a hell of a mess, but we went through that crater and up the other side, and then we got into a minefield. I mean, we figured that that's what happened to Tommy. Well, this is what's likely to happen to us. And we were pretty scared, of course, but we got into this minefield, and very quickly, when they got in there, I didn't get on a mine, but one of the tanks behind me. I had ordered the tank behind me to follow right in my tracks. I thought, well, if I don't hit a mine, he won't. And very soon after that, I looked back, he had, over the air in the radio, had told me that he hit a mine, and I looked back, and sure, he pointed down, yes, he's right in my tracks, and a mine had gone off. The Germans had set these mines deliberately so that a tank would go over them and the next tank would go off. You see, they wouldn't.
But this didn't kill him?
Oh, no. A mine doesn't do a tank any harm at all, except it knocks the track off and the tank is then unable to proceed. But it doesn't do any harm to the people.
What did Tommy?
Oh, Tommy's. That was a bomb. That was a bomb. And that had killed them all. I mean, I didn't know, though, until we all got in this minefield and they stopped us all, and we had to stop until the engineers had to come up and clear all these mines out of the orchard that we were in. And while they were doing that, we went and we had a cup of tea. We brewed up tea. You'd always brew up tea. As soon as anything stopped, you'd get out these little camp stoves and you'd brew up tea, and we were sitting in this minefield, and there was fighting going on all around, the infantry and everybody. But we were brewing up tea there and talking around this tank, Red Yellen's tank. And I asked him, what's happened with Tommy? And he looked at me and said, they're all dead. Of course, as though I ought to have known that. Well, I should ought to, but it looked as though they were. But, you know, you don't know. And so, and anyway, we sat there having this tea. And then when we got back in our tanks to proceed, the mines had been cleared. The first thing that happened was that the Red Yellen's tank started, and as soon as the track turned, the mine went off and threw the track off. We had all been sitting right on this mine that his tank had been sitting on, and it was just ready to go, and we'd been having tea there happily. And as soon as he started, as soon as the track moved, it went off. Anyhow, then we went up, I was the front one from then on, and we were going on, we went up through this orchard, and out sort of the other side of it, and there was a bunch of infantry up in a house, and they came up onto my tank and told me there's a bunch of Jerry's in this house, and can you help me get them out of this house? And so on. I said, yeah, we can, all right, but show me where the house is. And so we went up, and I remember there was this house through the olive tree, and I told it, we put the gun, I told the gunner to fire on this house. And the first shell hit a little twig on one of the trees, and that's all it would take, and it would explode. Then we shot this shell, and it went off in the tree, right? From this guy, the infantry officer, was in, no, try for God's sake, he says, don't hit the house, not the tree. My men are all amongst the trees. And so anyway, that was quite a confusion. But then we did put a few shells into the house itself. And at that point, suddenly on the radio, this voice came on, speaking quite good English, but saying, hello, HAL 1, HAL 2, HAL 3. That was our code number for our each of us. And we knew immediately that this was not one of us. We would have said, hello, all stations, HAL.
But
we knew immediately it was a German. That
he got would have said it the way the Germans would have done it, perhaps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so that then we heard these people behind the squadron leaders and so on said, radio silence, you know, shut down all your radios, and no more, you know, where the Germans are onto us. And so then, at this time, the tanks behind me started, I had fired on this house, and they all started to fire on this house. And this infantry officer is up on my tank and telling me, for God's sake, tell him to stop firing. The shells were all going off in the trees, and his men were in amongst the trees. And it was a hell of a shambles. But I tried to tell him to stop, and I'd say, hello, this is me, Bob Bigelow. You know, stop firing, because the infantry are in the trees. And nobody heard it, and they just went right on firing. Anyway, the Germans had probably cleared out of that house by that time anyway. And then I went on, and we got up along the road where they told us, the infantry said, up around this corner, there's a German tank waiting for you, you see, around this corner. So we got up, and we stopped, and they told us to stop, and they all came up, and we were all there, and this German tank is around the corner, and we're sitting here. We aimed the gun right where we knew about the right level on this tank, so that when it got dark, we'd know where he was. And we knew the only one place he could come around was on this road. And if he came around there, we knew we could get him. Of course, he knew the same thing about us.
If we came around, he could get us.
So we spent the whole night there, sitting each on the other side of that little turn in the road. And the next, that was a very miserable night, I remember. But we didn't do anything. We didn't go, and he didn't come. And in the morning at dawn, I remember I had this guy, one of the gunner in the tank, he and I were both listening, and we heard just in the morning, I was told the gunner, you know, if he comes, you get down and get ready and fire. We'll fire two or three shells, one right after the other. But by this time, it was light enough so that you could actually see, you know, and then they can really do a better job of the gunnery. And so the gunner was up looking at the lay of the land so that when he went back on, he'd know what to do. And we heard this engine start up. He said, oh, that's the Mark 4. He knew that was a German tank. So I told him, get down in there and get ready. And so we heard this thing start up, and we're already, we weren't really worried then, because if he came, we had him, we knew that.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't really worried, but we heard him go forward, back up, he turned around and he drove off. You could hear him, you couldn't see him, but you could hear him do that, and he disappeared. So that was,
they make quite a racket, you know, don't they?
Yeah, well, they're like a
stand-up.
Yeah, well, yeah. Like a fairly good sized one of these big lorries or something, you know, it's quite a big, they had a, quite a good sized engine. Anyway, then the others all went behind. I had been the front one up to that point, and then we went and had some tea while the others went all ahead of us. And then the whole business began in Ortona. We were there for about a week or so, with a number of things happened there, but I won't go on much more.